Lucis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present but not yet fully recognized. You have within you the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way with new eyes. So stay with us and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today, Living a Spiritual Life, Part 2. And before we explore this topic, I'd like to say a few words about Alice Bailey. The founder of Lucis Trust, Alice Bailey, wrote 24 volumes of literature. And those 24 volumes of literature are the main inspiration for the dialogue that you hear on this show. And the following thought is also from the works of Alice Bailey. Spiritual living and true spiritual understanding include every aspect of physical plane expression and not simply religious or philosophical considerations. Is spiritual development easier today than in the past or harder?
I'm not sure. It's in a unique situation in the present times. In the past, spiritual living was really more associated with people in the East. It was a phase of life in the Hindu faith. One had the phase of the student as a young person, then of the householder and family man, and then in later years one entered into the phase of the sannyasin, which was more overtly spiritual in its orientation. But here in the West, the expectation is that the seeker will find a way to manifest his spiritual values and his spiritual understanding while he or she remains very much a part of the active life of the Western world. And that's not so easy, because there's no retreat to the silent places or no opportunity to wander in the forest with a begging bowl for those of us who live in the West. Our challenge is to integrate spiritual living in the midst of the active, daily, modern life of the present times. So we could say that the challenge is harder, but the achievement, if we make it, will be even greater. And I suppose as a guideline, we have the advice from the Bible to be in the world but not of it. In other words, to live fully present in the modern life and to understand it and pay attention to it, because we can't just be blind to the suffering and crises of the world. We have to try to understand and help work out the causes of these terrific problems that are besetting humanity today. I don't believe we can be an ostrich and bury our head in the sand or in our spiritual books. But on the other hand, we have to have some part of us that is detached enough from the outer world that enables us to withdraw and retreat into a more abstract understanding of the energies and forces working out in the world and in ourselves.
Yes, I think detachment is a difficult word to grasp because, we brought it up in a previous show and talked about it, but it's being detached from the, let's say, the allure of the material world that we're immersed in. We can't avoid the material world. We can't really escape for it. I mean, we can hide ourselves to a monastery and go up into the mountains and live in a cave if we want to, but that's not really detachment, because we take all of our problems with us. So detachment is being detached from that which causes a reaction in you, and being careful about that, because it's being objective and seeing these energies and forces working out through you and be in control of those energies and forces.
I think materialism might be a hard thing for a lot of people in the West to understand because we are so inundated with material values. Maybe we should say cultivate a sense of sharing and of gratitude for small things rather than trying to tell yourself, I won't be materialistic, I won't want that new Mercedes Benz, I won't. That kind of just ignites the fire of desire even more. But if we cultivate the ability to share, to let whatever resources we have available to us, mental, emotional, or material, flow through our hands in a way that brings blessing to others, that can be a means of manifesting a spiritual life, even in the midst of a great deal of abundance. Because it's possible to live a spiritual life if you are impoverished. It's also possible to live a spiritual life if you're very wealthy. I think over the course of lifetime after lifetime, we have to learn to handle it all, abundance and the lack of abundance.
And that's one life can be full of abundance, and the other life can be in poverty. I mean, that's the way the soul reacts and brings out a more of a balance in the whole experience of soul working through the world. And I was going to say, which I think we touched on it last time, was the characteristics that must come through from the soul, because it is the soul that is the kind of the evolutionary urge that's moving everything forward here, and how it manifests in our life depends on how we react to these soul impulses. So it's a matter of seeing it, stepping back and detaching yourself from that reactive nature that you have, and seeing how these energies of the soul actually work out through you.
Yes, trying to get a more of a sense of being in control of your life, of being at the helm of mm-hmm. your life. A lot of people today feel buffeted about by life and by forces that are utterly beyond their control. And I can understand that feeling. I share it myself sometimes, but I do think we are more in control of our life and our fate and our circumstances than we might realize. In a way, it's a denial of responsibility if you think life is just something that happens to you, when in fact the ageless wisdom tells us that whatever our circumstances are, they are our own creation. And the willingness to accept the truth of that means that life is basically what you make it and what you make of it. And that's why I think the cultivation of gratitude is so important in living a spiritual life. Be grateful for whatever your circumstances are. Look for the blessings. They might be small, but they're there. And our ability to see the good in life, in our own life and in others' lives, develops a kind of a positivity toward life that is enormously creative and brings a flow of more spiritual energy, certainly than negativity and fear do. Another important attribute for living a spiritual life is decentralization, just getting oneself off center stage. More and more, as the mind develops, I think the person tends to be always at the center of life because the mind is thinking and alert and aware, and there is that tendency with that development to put oneself at the center of whatever action or experience there is. And that can be imprisoning in a way. It can be isolating. Getting out of the habit of seeing everything in terms of self-interest, in terms of what's in it for me, will it make me happy, will it further my goals, and learning to think in terms of the larger whole, whether it's family or group or nation or humanity, that can be liberating.
And that opens up the heart center, and that allows the energy of love to flow, because you're not deflecting it and grounding it in oneself, in yourself, your own little personality life. You're letting it flow outward, and that's so very important. That's why service is emphasized so many times.
Service is fundamental to the spiritual life, and certainly if there's one message you take away from the books of Alice Bailey, it is the need to be of service. What do we mean by service? Well, some people might think it's the Red Cross entering into disaster areas. That's one type of service that's enormously important for the people in crisis. But service on a spiritual level means so much more than that. It means basically an expression of a great spiritual law that says the light must enter vertically and be diffused or radiated horizontally. If you can get a picture of that in your minds, you understand what service is to the soul. The light must enter vertically from the abstract or unformed realm, and it must be diffused or radiated, shared horizontally. In other words, dispersed outward within one's environment, whatever that might be, one's place of work, one's family, one's community, the planet, whatever one sees as one's environment, as one's field of living in the world, on terra firma, that's where one's service must be radiated. Alice Bailey said something very interesting about service in the present time. She said that service must express itself on broader and more inclusive lines, and we must learn to serve as Christ served, to love all people as He loved them, and by the potency of our spiritual vitality, stimulate everyone we meet so that they too can love and serve.
And of course the great symbol there is the cross of service, the evened arm cross, that vertical and horizontal arms, and that's the kind of the new symbol of the new age, the cross of evened arm cross of service.
She said the call is not for fanatics, for the Bible bangers, so to speak, or for the rabid devotees who so mar the whole essence of divinity. She said the call is for sane and normal men and women who can comprehend the situation, face what has to be done, and then give their lives to expressing for the world the qualities of the citizens of the kingdom of souls, which are love, wisdom, silence, non-separativeness, freedom from hatreds and from partisan beliefs. Those are the essence of the spiritual life, and I would think all of us can imagine ways in which we can begin to express more of those qualities within our families and our workplaces and our communities.
For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. Our topic for today, Living a Spiritual Life, Part 2. We have a special offer from Lucis Publishing Company today, and that's the Alice Bailey book, Serving Humanity. Serving Humanity is a compilation of extracts from all 24 books by Alice Bailey. And it's available for $16 today, and the discount comes in the form of free shipping and handling. Serving Humanity is an inspiring compilation of extracts that will help the reader's understanding of true service and why it's so important to spiritual development. So what you need to do if you want to order the book Serving Humanity at the discount is send a check or money order, $16, to Lucis, Lucis is L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005, and write a little note saying that you heard about the offer on the program Inner Sight. And once again, that's Serving Humanity, $16 check or money order to Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And also, we appreciate your donations, large and small. They're an expression to us of your support. We certainly thank you for that, and that's what keeps us on the air. If you need to get in contact with us for any reason whatsoever, to order cassette tapes of the radio shows, a schedule of meditation meetings, or a package of general information about Lucis Trust, contact us at our toll-free number, 1-866 1-866-695-8247. That's 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it is 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of 1-866-NY-LUCIS. We have a website, and if you'd like to, you can key into that website. A lot of people do so to find out a lot of information about LUCIS Trust. And one reason also is to listen to the previously archived library of Inner Sight radio shows. So if you'd like to look at the website, it's www.lucistrust.org. I was wondering, an individual who might want to live the spiritual life and is really attempting to do so, it must be, how does one integrate it? If we're living in a family and people have different ideas and maybe not everybody in the family is into trying to be in sync with live the spiritual life, how do we integrate living the spiritual life within a family, for example?
That can be a huge challenge, and I've known so many people who have struggled with that very challenge, because the family is composed of human beings, of individuals, all of whom are souls themselves, and they are not all necessarily at the same stage in development or living out the same objectives, even though they're within a family unit. And Alice Bailey knew something about this. She was a mother of three daughters and a wife, and she knew very well the challenges of home life, as many of us probably do too. And she had some very wise words about it. She especially emphasized to the person seeking to develop a more spiritual approach to life within the family to cultivate the virtue of silence. Again, it's all too human when we have discovered something that really ignites our enthusiasm and speaks to our heart in a way that's so joyful and meaningful, we want to share it and we talk about it. But we tend to talk about it too much and in the wrong way. And that enthusiasm is a quality of the emotional nature that bubbles up and wants to communicate, but it isn't always well received, and a lot of damage can be done. I've seen cases of people turning spouses and children into enemies by the wrong demonstration of spiritual living that makes the person isolated within the family and kind of sanctimonious and judgmental and virtually tyrannical over everybody else, because this person has decided he or she must meditate and have absolute quiet in the morning, and he or she must study spiritual books for a certain amount of time and be left alone by everybody in the family, and he or she has decided to change the diet in a way that affects everybody else in the home. These things need common sense and sensitivity toward the concerns of others, and a willingness to be quiet and to remember that the spiritual path is one that is really trod in isolation. It's a path inward into one's deepest inner center, and in a sense, nobody else's business.
And it's a good lesson in the art of love.
And absolutely.
Because if you can understand that perhaps your consciousness is changing and moving in another direction, and which seems to be a different direction than the rest of your family consciousness, then more of that love is very necessary in that case, to understand that they too are on a path, perhaps not the same path as you are, but it's a great place to stand back and to really try to understand the whole situation there, that you can't impose your epiphanies on the family members.
And valuable as they would be.
That's right. And it, as you say, I have too, I've seen cases where families have split apart.
Yes.
And this is tragic when it happens, because perhaps it just wasn't handled right. These disciples, suddenly they've had this revelation, or they found some books and some teachings of some kind, and they think that this is the answer to everything.
It's their answer.
Yeah. And it's the same whether it's a religious epiphany or some esoteric epiphany, you know, about the soul.
Well, it's their answer, but not the answer for their family.
That's right. And it isn't. And it's very, very difficult to get this across and to accept it at the time. But it has to be done.
Yeah, and there's a great deal that's learned in the family unit. Alice Bailey called it the crucible of discipleship, I think. A crucible, as I understand it, is a little vessel in which mineral elements are mashed up and pulverized and fired and, I suppose, metamorphosed into a new state of being. That's what happens within family life. We are put through the fires of contact with other souls in a very intimate way and transformed into more radiant souls. But sometimes the pain that's caused is needless if there were more sensitivity and more respect for the divinity that is in everyone. We are not all on the same path. We are not all at the same point on the path. And a little more respect for the differences and confidence that there is light within everybody that is leading each of us sooner or later towards greater soul realization would enable us to leave them freer and not try to dictate to them what we think they need.
But aren't there goals that one can can establish?
Yes, realistic goals for this enormous endeavor of leading a more spiritual life. The first goal, I would think, is to build a rhythm into the daily life. In other words, not rely on spiritual pursuits as something you do once a year when you go on a retreat. But more importantly, spiritual endeavor is something that is built into the daily life, even if it's only 10 minutes for meditation in the morning. Can't you get up 10 minutes early to establish that practice? You can and you will if you need to. And you are the only one that can decide if you need to do that. You'll know when you need to.
And the goals, like we, I think we mentioned in the previous program, about determining just what new attitudes you want to adopt,
mm-hmm.
and then visualizing them, using this as if technique, perhaps. Visualize what you would look like and how you would react in the ideal situation.
We're not talking about, though, an ideal of perfection, are we?
No, because if you have too great an ideal, then you'll never make it.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be something
realistic. That's
realistic, that's within reach. Otherwise, it's it's a false goal.
Mm-hmm. And we can keep in mind that whatever objectives or goals we set for ourselves, the family won't be the only potential source of opposition. Our greatest opposition will be from within our own personal forces. Because when we commit ourselves to spiritual growth, we are putting our car in reverse, so to speak. We are reversing the age-old dominance of the personality that has had its free reign for eons of time. And the personality being the part of us that says, I am, I will, I want, I assert, I. When the consciousness is focused outward on material achievement and so on, that's fine. Number one is looked after and gets its goals met. But the spiritual life turns the consciousness inward and upward toward a universal state of awareness that the personality rebels at mightily because it's no longer in the central position. It's not all about the individual self because one's entering into a level of consciousness that is completely inclusive, ultimately. The personality senses this and throws up a terrible fit. And we should be ready for this and monitor the resistance as just part of the path that doesn't last forever.
That's what can be so discouraging to many people. They this resistance to change.
When we're trying to be good, why should it be so hard?
Right. And people get discouraged and they just give up.
Yeah.
And it's easy to do. It's easy to give up. But,
mm-hmm.
but you have to realize that's what's happening. It's the soul is trying to make its impact and to gain more control over the life of this personality. And so it's a battle of control, and
mm-hmm.
there are names for it. It's the dweller on the threshold is the rather strange name that is given to this reaction by the personality life.
Another word for it is an empire. We are, in a way, building an empire within our own personal nature. The empire of acquisition of land and power is nothing compared to the empire over one's own self, becoming a real master over one's equipment and energies and forces. I think this tendency to give up is, if anything, more exacerbated today by the so common attitude of if it feels good, do it, and go with the flow, and don't resist. The worthy goal is one that will come easily. If there's any friction or resistance, it means you shouldn't be aspiring to that goal. I don't think that's really accurate. I think that's, in fact, the line of inertia that one can follow, taking the easy path and looking at the signs and saying, well, this will be easy, so I should do this. Sometimes the harder path is the more worthy one.
Yes, it's the rocky path that you keep stubbing your toe on, and but it's shorter in the long run because it takes you right up the mountain.
Mm-hmm. And, well, we should perhaps close by recalling that a commitment to spiritual living is in itself a realization that one is going to undergo a forcing process. We could take the other option of just letting evolution take its course, and that will get us to our goal eventually, and many people do take that option. But if we commit to a spiritual life, we're undergoing a forcing process. It's not easy, but it's worthy.
Please take advantage of the special offer from Lucis Publishing Company, and that's the Alice Bailey book, Serving Humanity. Serving Humanity is a compilation of extracts from all 24 books by Alice Bailey. It's discounted today. The price is $16. So what you need to do if you want to take advantage of the offer and get the book Serving Humanity is send a check or money order to Lucis Publishing, Lucis, L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. Also, if you'd like to get in touch with us for any reason whatsoever, give us a call at 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of New York Lucis. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.